futuro. Hey, family! Welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And you know what's up. It's ITT Sound Off.
Which means it's the end of a week. And it's springtime. All right, Julio.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm great. It's Friday. It's a long week, but I'm here. Let's talk about a couple of things that happened this week.
All right. Our first topic is an update on the latest legislation in terms of gun control. Mm. Most people, if you have a TV on, you've been watching the trial of Derek Chauvin. But Thursday, all of this was interrupted because President Biden was on television announcing 6 executive orders on gun control, calling gun violence in the United States an epidemic. And we're about to talk very critically about all of this, but also I'm so glad to be seeing a president doing something like this as opposed to some of the bullshit we had to watch over the last 4 years past, okay?
Yeah.
Let's talk about these executive orders. And some things that Biden is doing with them include limiting ghost guns. These are self-made firearms. And also making it easier for people to flag family members who should not be allowed to purchase firearms. So these are good. Mm. And through his recent $2.3 trillion infrastructure proposal, Biden is making an additional $5 billion in funding available to community violence prevention efforts.
Yeah.
This is at the request of advocates like our recent ITT guest, Greg Jackson Jr.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and a survivor of gun violence.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is personal, but also national. Mm-hmm. These actions, while, yes, really good, are modest.
Yeah.
And Biden himself acknowledged that a lot more is needed, calling on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban and expand background checks. And let's talk about the gun lobby, et cetera, et cetera.
Take on the NRA, all that stuff that he said.
Exactly. So, people, this is what democracy looks like. It doesn't look like just one vote. It looks like you voicing your opinions throughout and engaging in democracy by also listening to ITT. And that leads us to the fact that we've also been tracking the latest on these voter suppression bills that are happening across the country in front of our eyes, including the new voting law in Georgia that we covered in our recent ITT episodes.
Yeah.
So on Tuesday, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms issued an administrative order to counter the statewide restrictions. Boom, take that.
Boom.
And this was essentially to help every Atlanta resident exercise their right to vote.
Nice.
So we're seeing local governments push back. By the way, happens to be that she's one of the several Black women who are leading important cities in the United States, like Atlanta. Mm. And there is, you know, this local government pushback. Now, so far, Kentucky. I love this. I do love Kentucky.
Take me to Louisville any day.
It's the only state with a Republican-controlled legislature to actually pass a bipartisan bill to expand voting rights. Except, you know, there's always a twist.
Of course.
Because it's important to note that prior to the pandemic, Kentucky actually had some of the strictest voting laws in the country. So this is basically like, oh, we're trying to make up for a bunch of bad shit that we did.
Yeah, it was a lot of shit. So now we're going to give you less shit.
Yeah. So a lot this week, Julio. So what are you thinking?
It's just, you know, the Biden orders. Oh, by the way, the same day this happened, DHS and Customs and Border Patrol like announced that the most encounters since 2001 at the Southwest border have occurred. That was released on Thursday as well. So,
yes,
I was like, did anyone ask a question about that to Jen Psaki? And I actually looked at the transcript.
Okay.
I didn't see a lot of like immigration talk. Mm-hmm. I think you're seeing like the Biden media cycle being like, we're going to talk about this now. So like, we're going to forget. You know what I'm saying?
I'm so glad you brought that up because ITT, Latino USA, the work we do, we're not here for the, oh, show up now with the live trucks and the thing and be there in front, you know, and then
Maria Hinojosa live.
There are children being held and then disappear. Fuck you. I mean, yes, but no. And of course, if it was up to me, ya tú sabes, Joe Biden should be down at the border saying, oh my gosh, first to the refugees, I love you. And second, to people who are coming because they actually are ready to start a new life for whatever the hell, right? Because people want to move.
Yeah.
He should say, you are part of our economic boom. Mm. Come on, let's go. Let's get to work.
And Maria, we've also been covering the wave of anti-trans bills that have been introduced in legislatures all across, you know, the states of America.
Just like what?
Yeah. Last Friday, the fabulous Jamila King and you. Mm-hmm. It was so great to hear Jamila King.
She's so good.
You talked about the bill in Arkansas that would prohibit doctors mm-hmm. from giving trans youth gender affirming care.
I mean, WTF.
Okay, so that bill had passed both the State House and the Senate, but after organizing from local and national advocates, Governor Asa Hutchinson vetoed the bill on Monday.
Interesting.
But then the following day, the Republican-controlled House and the Senate in Arkansas, they voted to override the veto.
Oh, Jesus.
Making Arkansas the first state to deny health care to trans youth in this way.
Pero por favor. Okay, you know what? I'm sorry for the trans youth who are listening in Arkansas. We love you.
Yeah, and many of these bills specifically target trans athletes. Okay, so that's another thing that people mm-hmm. need to know. So we're seeing the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or the NCAA, so student athletes, and the Women's National Basketball Association, the WNBA, coaches and athletes from that league pushing back. And in December, WNBA's Candace Parker, along with one of my favorite tennis players of all time, Billie Jean King.
I stopped her on the street once and I was like, you're a goddess. She was like, me.
I love it. And also one of my favorite soccer players of all time, mm-hmm. Megan Rapinoe, who kicks ass. They all joined more than 175 athletes to file amicus briefs in support of a lawsuit against a law in Idaho that bans trans women from competing in women's sports. Mm. Idaho was the first state to do so last year, that ban. So now at least 24 states have proposed similar legislation. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because this all reminds me of a recent episode of the Translash podcast hosted by our incredible ITT all-star, Amara Jones.
It's so good.
Right? And Amara talked with Cece Telfer, the first openly trans woman to win an NCAA title. So let's take a listen.
What insights you have about the fact that this is as much about taking away our legitimacy as people, as Black people, and then taking away our legitimacy as women because we're stereotyped.
Absolutely. I will be glad to speak on that. And thank you so much for vocalizing that and recognizing that racial discrimination and hate is a plays a huge role in this situation, because not only that it's the Black female, like trans lives that are mostly targeted, to me, it seems like the only lives that are targeted, especially when it comes to gender in sports. And also, let's not forget that Black people in general competing in athletics was unfair to the world because of their quote unquote reasons were bone mass, height.
Yep.
Who came up with these rules? White men. I know that you spoke to Chris Mosier today. He came to my school and I was so glad that he brought up when he transitioned, the privilege that came to him being a white man, people are going out of their way to like greet him, show him the utmost respect, like all of that. When Black women are transitioning, they get a lot more hate. They get a lot more discrimination, a lot less respect and all of that stuff. It's just sad because that's why I said that I'm such a naive little girl, because I just expect the world to be just like me and wear their hearts and their shoulders, because we're all going through the same things. It would make so much sense for all of us to be on the same boat, supporting each other and making the movement stronger.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
just making the world stronger, happier.
Yeah, this is a better place when we are more inclusive.
I always think of Benito Juarez.
Yeah.
You know, the first indigenous president of Mexico, Zapotec Indian.
Yeah.
1865. And he said, "El respeto al derecho ajeno es la paz." Respect for other people's rights mm-hmm. is peace.
Yeah.
I don't know. By the way, somebody named Jesus Christ said the same thing. Am I right?
I think, yes.
I don't know. It's April, Easter.
Today in the thick theology with Marina Hossa. Okay. Listen, let's move on to our second topic. And that is a COVID-19 relief for undocumented immigrants who have been shut out of federal COVID-19 stimulus money and unemployment benefits. And we have talked about that before on In the Thick.
This is huge.
This week, history was made with a $2.1 billion fund for economic relief and direct cash assistance to undocumented immigrants that was included in a budget that was passed in New York State.
Amazing. It's amazing.
This is the largest fund of this sort in the country.
Ever.
Right. And we also know that California passed a similar relief program last year, which set the model, but it wasn't as big as New York's. We have to recognize that this would have never...
How did this happen?
Yeah, exactly. How did this happen? It wasn't politicians going, oh, let's do this from the kindness of our hearts. No.
Although Cuomo is looking for anything to make himself look good, but...
Okay.
Also, we're going to be dropping an episode where we're going to be talking about Cuomo and what's up with men who can't handle power. That's going to come up next week on Tuesday.
This wouldn't have happened without months of advocacy and organizing,
yes,
including a 23-day long hunger strike by workers, making Into Thick debut our new team member, intern Nicole Basilino.
Woo-hoo.
She spoke to Angeles Solis, who's the lead organizer of the Workplace Justice Team at Make the Road New York. She coordinated these latest hunger strikes with the Fund Excluded Workers campaign. So let's take a listen as they chatted while Angeles took a break from work.
And apparently it's a little noisy there, so just FYI.
Yeah.
I mean, this is hard. I'm a young organizer. I'm a daughter of immigrants. This is deeply personal for me. But at the forefront of my mind are the hunger strikers who are still recovering. To put your body in that situation for over 20 days puts you at risk of heart failure, lung failure, seizures, and refeeding syndrome. And we're talking about people who don't even go to hospitals, don't go to dentists, don't go to city and state agencies to seek support because there's fear of deportation, there's fear of arrest, and also there's barriers to access and to navigate healthcare systems and any sort of social service system. So for them to put their bodies on the line like that was a huge sacrifice and a big risk. And the majority of the hunger strikers were women and working mothers. I'm thinking about one person in particular, Maria, who has 5 kids, several grandchildren. She's a single mother. One of her children has a disability. And she, although hadn't eaten for weeks, still found the strength to pick up garbage in Washington Square Park every day so she could send cash home to her family. And I think that although we celebrate this victory, it cost us a lot. It cost lives. Every single action we did, we named and honored the lost family members, community members, colleagues to COVID. We centered our cultural traditions. We centered our art. We centered our joy in the struggle. But there's still a lot of grief.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
In terms of the power of organizing, every granito de arena, every little grain of sand of organizing accumulated leads to something like this. Mm. And, you know, Julio, we may be seeing the beginning of actually a wave of undocumented people and allies and activists taking back their power and actually, yes, putting their bodies on the line, like Dolores Huerta says, using people power to move these issues. Undocumented workers in New Jersey have launched their own hunger strike less than 24 hours after this passed in New York.
Wow.
And I think back to a year ago, you know, the undocumented workers were still on the trains from the Bronx into Manhattan.
Yeah, even up here in Massachusetts. That's why I did the Chelsea, Massachusetts story for Latino USA. That was the same thing. It was everywhere.
Exactly. So not only are they working continuously, often in high risk, but they are paying taxes, right? They didn't get any stimulus. In fact, there's punishment. We have to value their lives. This was really something that to me is, I think, not only huge and historic, but I think, again, could have a national impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk a lot about people's humanity, right? So a lot of people are talking about these undocumented individuals. They should be valued not just because they were the essential workers who were on the subways and keeping New York functioning, but also because they're people, they're New Yorkers. And their lives matter and they are part of our communities and they have families right here who are also New Yorkers. Let's go back to Angela Solis from Make the Road New York.
It took the federal government months to put together a small check that barely covered anybody's bills. But in this campaign, we were determined not to make that mistake. So our narrative and our push and our campaign centered the fact that undocumented immigrants pay taxes. However, they were the first ones to have to go to work during the pandemic. They were the last ones to receive any sort of relief or protections from eviction moratoriums or rent relief programs. They were completely excluded. What we called for was direct cash assistance. Monuments to essential workers don't save lives. Cash in their pockets does. And we knew this was bold. We also know it's not enough. We've set the precedent, but it's on everybody to act on what they've just seen.
Yeah.
Julio, the thought of some people, not everybody's going to be able to, but it's a maximum $15,600, I believe. The thought of what a family could do with that.
Oh.
Dios. I mean, yeah. You know, my husband said, ¿Y tú crees que la gente se va a ir a presentar? Do you really think undocumented people are going to go and present themselves right now? Because there is fear. Mm-hmm. Now there's a whole other conversation about how do we engage? How do we create a sense of trust, right?
Right, right.
When still people in New York are being picked up and taken by ICE.
Yeah.
But what a way to end the week.
Yeah.
Whew.
So I wanted to call attention to another story about organizing. And this came out of WDET in Detroit, that a group of young activists from Detroit and Dearborn are leading a hunger strike in Washington, D.C., protesting the blockade of Yemen and urging a change in U.S. policy toward Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they are on day 12 of their hunger strike. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about Dolores and people power. You're seeing these pockets, right? That's not going away under a Biden-Harris administration. And it didn't go away during the Obama-Biden administration. And so I think you're still seeing people saying certain issues are deeply personal and matter, and we need to keep showing up and organizing. And if it means risking our health, you're literally putting your lives on the line.
And we've been putting our lives on the line in this country for the entire past year. So,
yeah.
Like I said, power to the young people. I say it all the time. The future of democracy in this country is sitting on your shoulders. And if you feel the pressure on your shoulders, that's because I'm putting it right there. But I'm telling you, young people, activists, people who love democracy, participating.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. And I'm also terrified. I'm getting my second shot on Sunday. And Julio, wish me luck.
You'll be fine.
Okay, thank you. Have a good one, everybody. Love ya. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Oh, dear listener, please go rate and review us at Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
Remember, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you choose to get your podcasts on. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. You better be telling your friends and family to listen. Okay, In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, Harsha Nahata, and our New York Winds Foundation Ignite fellow, Lisa Salinas, along with our intern, Nicole Basolino, with editorial support from Erica Dilday. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZK Records. Woo! Have a great one, people. Yeah, enjoy the springtime if you can.
Ooh.
Bye.
Take care, everybody. I said Megan Rapinoe. She's on my list of people I want to have dinner with.
There's a list?
I have a list. Don't you have a list?
Is it dead or alive or just alive people?
Well, I have two. I have a dead one. I have an alive one.
Like on your phone?
I have it written in my journal. You know, I write things on paper.
I do too. I do too. I do too. That's not the part that has me stuck. I'm like, should I be making a list of people I want to have dinner with?
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.